Milwaukee Bucks, Milwaukee Journal Sentinel podcast. Joining you yet again, my name is J.R. Radcliffe, host of the podcast, and I am joined, as always, by Matt Velasquez, Milwaukee Journal Sentinel beat reporter who has been traveling around the world with the Milwaukee Bucks as they continue on a pretty substantial road trip. The real meat and potatoes of that beginning on Wednesday with a matchup against the Los Angeles Clippers. It'll be the Jazz a couple nights after that, then the Thunder on Sunday before they finally return home. Bucks beat the Timberwolves on Monday and have looked pretty good of late. They've won three in a row here after kind of a struggling 2-2 start where I think a lot of Bucks fans were a little bit nervous. Matt, last time we talked, we thought that maybe there was something a little bit off about the Milwaukee Bucks. Does it feel like this little stretch of three games has assuaged any concerns that you or others may have? Or does it feel like there's some things that still stick out? Because I feel like a lot of the big questions, Eric Bledsoe, getting to the basket, things like that, I feel like we saw a lot of that in these last couple games, and maybe the Bucks are back sort of hitting their stride.
I think they have definitely taken some steps in the right direction. I think their defense, which is, I'm sure, where Mike Budenholzer would start, the defense has been markedly better. They're still playing at a high pace. And they've been able to limit teams to the low hundreds, which when you're playing at a high pace like they are, that's pretty good when you're at that point. I mean, obviously, they kept the Orlando Magic below 100, which is even better. But I think that they've generally started to kind of get into their roles and know where they need to be and know what they need to do on that end. I think offensively, you're starting to see more guys contributing. Obviously, the bench has been really good recently. I mean, for probably almost the whole year, the bench has been really good. But we've had, new guys stepping up. Dante DiVincenzo, Sterling Brown, Eric Bledsoe starting to hit his stride a little bit. The team, against the Timberwolves, they were up 7 at halftime, even though they weren't shooting the ball well. And, if you're playing the Bucks and they're not shooting well from three-point range and you're not winning, it's going to be tough for you to win, because eventually most games they're going to kind of get over that hump. They're going to start making shots. They're going to have stretches where, they knock down 3, 4, 5 three-pointers in a short period of time. And if you aren't already ahead, it's going to be tough to handle those types of situations. So I think we've just seen everybody kind of settle in to where they need to be, at least a little bit more settled than they have been. You're getting contributions from up and down the roster. And it's been really positive so far over the last three games. But like you mentioned, that game against the Clippers on Wednesday night, that's going to be a big test. That's going to be a game where there's going to be a ton of eyeballs, a ton of media, a ton of takes, depending on what happens in that game. Because obviously it is Kawhi and the Clippers, against the Bucks. It is one of the best teams in the Western Conference, one of the favorites to win the championship, hosting the Milwaukee Bucks, one of the best teams in the East, one of the other favorites, less favorite, but still favorite, teams from the Eastern Conference to compete for the title. And I think it'll be a great atmosphere, a great game, and I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah, so last year, early on, the Bucks were obviously red hot to start. They were 8-0, and so there was no question that they were a pretty elite team. But I do think when they went to Golden State and really kind of put a hurt on a very good Warriors team, that was sort of the moment, even though it came on the West Coast and a lot of people were already in bed, that was the moment when they really sort of became the juggernaut Bucks that they were for most of the season. And I feel like that could happen with the Clippers here. I feel like this could be a pretty important moment. Maybe I'm overstating it, because it's obviously we're on game number, number 9. There's not like there's still plenty in front of them, but I feel like it would be a huge boost, shot in the arm confidence-wise, to know that they can, if nothing else, beat Kawhi Leonard, but to go and get a Clippers team that's seen as one of the favorites. I feel like this could be a major moment already in this Bucks season. Am I overstating it?
I mean, I don't think you're overstating it. I think this is a really big game. They only play the Clippers twice. So you're going to get just a few opportunities. The other game against the Clippers, I believe, is in fairly early December. So they're coming kind of bang, bang. We'll have to see if Paul George is even back by the time they play the Clippers again. Because obviously he's a huge piece of what they are and what they're going to be. And the Clippers, as great as they are right now and as great as they have been to start the season, Paul George raises their ceiling all the higher. But just seeing those two teams go against each other, I think that this could be, you know, a really, I don't know, like a measuring stick kind of game, but maybe more than that, just because of all the history, especially with the Bucks and Kawhi. That's kind of the focal point of it, and the expectations for both these two teams. But at the same time, like, it's not like it's the end all be all. If they win this game, it doesn't mean all of a sudden like they're crowned and the Bucks are the best team and then they're gonna do all kinds of great things. They could then go out and lose to Utah the next game. It also doesn't mean if they lose that this means that they're broken in some way and can't compete with the roster that they have or anything like that. It just means that, okay, they played a really tough team on the road and lost, and they could still, you know, salvage the rest of the trip. I think one thing some people forget about that West Coast trip last year was that it was a 2-2 trip. Like, they beat the Warriors, you know, at Oracle, and they beat the Nuggets at Pepsi Center, which are two really impressive road wins for teams that don't lose at home. Yeah, they don't lose at home often. But also on that trip, they got waxed by the Trailblazers, who got hot from the mid-range and, you know, put a, you know, double-digit loss on them. You know, and then they also, you know, lost another game in that trip, which I'm blanking on right now.
Was that Philly? I'm blanking as well.
No, it's a West Coast trip.
Not Philly. Yeah, okay. I was thinking actually Washington, but still, different trip.
I'm trying to remember where I was traveling to and from during that trip, and it's already escaping me. But I'm going to go back and look, because now I feel silly.
Well, there was a Sacramento game that they won in overtime. But
of course. They lost to the Clippers.
Oh, yes. There it is.
So, Let me just, yeah, I'm sure there are people who are screaming at their, you know, at their phone or something like that, like, Matt, like, you're an idiot.
Like, we're interactive like that.
Yes. You know, but that was like a 128-126 overtime loss where Eric Bledsoe, you know, forced overtime, played really well. And then Lou Williams killed him at the end. A really fun game. But, you know, that was the trip. It was, you know, lose at Portland, win at Golden State, lose at the Clippers, and then win on a back-to-back in Denver. And then they come back from the trip and they lose to the Memphis Grizzlies. So, like, that was a stretch of the season where the Bucks were, like, really, you know, kind of feeling shaky. They had won 8 in a row, but then November came and there started to be questions like, is this actually working? Are the Bucks going to fall back to earth? And then we found out that was just a temporary blip. And they won 60 games. And so right now, they could run into a situation where, you know, they could end this trip with a 2-2 trip. They could lose two of the next three games, you know, when they're playing the Clippers, Jazz, and Thunder. And while that wouldn't be ideal, it still doesn't preclude them from, you know, becoming the top team in the East by the end of the season, or winning a high number of games. I think the important thing is trying to maximize this trip, play well. You don't want to get blown out in any of these games. You know, but if you can be competitive in all these places, tough places to play, tough teams, I think, you know, especially if they can win the last game against the Thunder, you know, that kind of ends the trip on a positive note and kind of springboards them forward into a, you know, I think it's like one home game and then they're back on the road for three more. So this is a really road heavy month, but at least they're going back to Eastern Conference opponents, and maybe that might, you know, be a little bit easier in terms of travel distance and, you know, level of competition and all that. So like you said, it is a big game. It is important. It could tell us some things, but I'm just going to like be that like wet blanket that says, hey, this isn't like the end all be all.
I think you're right that many fans have forgotten about that road trip early in the season because things went so smoothly thereafter and for the rest of the season that I do remember us talking about back-to-back losses at one point and how what that might tell us, how, you know, should we be overreacting? Two straight losses. It was that kind of season for the Bucks where two losses was actually a low point and a road trip going 2-2 was a low point. You mentioned that Paul George will not be in that game. Likewise, the Timberwolves were without Karl Anthony Towns, who was suspended for his fight with Joel Embiid. The Bucks took advantage on Monday, winning big 134-106. 2 days earlier, they won, exercised some demons against Kawhi's old team, the Raptors, 115-105. Similar to a couple other games we've seen this year where they struggled in the third quarter, but seemed to they did pull away, though, at the end. They beat the Magic, like you said, 123-91 on November 1st and fell to the Celtics, kind of an ugly game, October 30th, 116-105. That was their last loss. Eric Bledsoe has kind of been the hot topic, I guess, in these recent games. He struggled a little bit at the outset, and there is maybe some growing sentiment, or was growing sentiment, that if the Bucks are to improve or have an area they need to improve on to become a championship caliber team, that point guard might be the place to go. And some rumblings a little bit last week with Chris Paul indicating that he wouldn't mind playing in Milwaukee, and I want to talk about him, but specifically looking right now at Eric Bledsoe, I don't know if he's much different from the Eric Bledsoe we had last year. There is a little bit of an inconsistency in his game, but we also, you know, defensively especially, we saw a lot out of Eric Bledsoe last year, and I don't know if we're misremembering some of the iffy games that he's had, or if there is something really noticeable to him early in the season, and if what you've seen over the last three games is any different from that. If you think that he has taken steps forward in these last couple games, I guess if where should Bucks fans' worry meter be with Eric Bledsoe? Should they even have any worries at all with what he's got going on?
I mean, I think it's reasonable to have some worry, but this question is you know, pretty apt considering right before we hopped on the podcast, I just filed a story on Eric Bledsoe.
Oh, so go to jsonline.com.
Yes, so you can go there, you can read it, you can see what's going on. But I talked to him a little bit in Orlando. I talked to him a little bit on my own after the game against the Timberwolves, you know, because I'd really noticed a trend so far in the first seven games where he is really looking for his own shot in the first quarter. And he's really trying to press the issue, to shoot, to get to the rim, all that stuff in the first quarter. And so I checked out the numbers. And actually, even before I checked the numbers, I said, Eric, is this like a thing? Like, are you trying to do that? And he was like, oh, yeah, I'm definitely trying to shoot more, like, in the first quarter, because defenses are sagging off of him. And so he wants to kind of set a tone, like, okay, I know you're going to sag off me, so I'm going to shoot. And I'm going to show you that I'm willing to shoot. And in the first quarter of games, he's 6 of 11 on threes. And so he's showing teams, hey, if you're going to sag off me, you know, I'm going to shoot. And then when you come up on me, I'm going to drive. And I'm going to, like, really try and keep you off balance. And that the goal of that is to try to take some of that pressure off Giannis, to take some of that pressure off Chris Middleton, to establish himself as a threat. And we saw that, you know, at its best on Monday night against the Timberwolves when he had 11 points on 5 of 8 shooting in the first quarter alone. And one of those misses that he had was like right at the rim. He actually got himself free for a layup. I think he just misjudged where he was and kind of hit the front of the rim on it. But, you know, he created the separation and the space to give himself that opportunity. And so he's been trying to be really aggressive. Now, the problem is that, you know, after that second quarter, his numbers are generally fine in the second quarter. Actually, his assist numbers are really high. Like, in second quarters of the games this season, he has 16 assists compared to, I think, the most in any other quarter of the season is 7 in first quarters of games. So he's more than doubling, like, his assists per quarter, you know, in the second quarter compared to the first, where he, after trying to call his own number, he's then going and trying to drive and kick and find his teammates and create and things like that. The problem is that his three-pointers aren't falling almost at all outside of the first quarter. Like I mentioned, he's 6 of 11 on threes in the first quarter. You want to take a stab at what he is after that?
I'm going to go with 2 for 25.
Not that bad.
Oh, okay. My apologies to Eric Bledsoe.
Actually, no. Worse. But not that many attempts.
Okay.
So he is 1 of 19.
Oh, wow.
After the first quarter. Oh, and in the second halves of games, he's 0 for 13.
Oh, that's bad.
Now, the thing is that he's actually getting like the same looks. Like he is open or wide open according to NBA.com's like tracking data, which means the closest defender is 4 feet away or further for like all of his first half threes. And he is open or wide open for all except for one of his second half threes, but he's 0 of 13 on those. So he's getting this like catch and shoots, he's getting pull-ups, he's getting open looks. They're just not going down. And, you know, part of that is just kind of bad luck. Maybe some of it's fatigue over the course of the game. But he is trying to keep the numbers relatively the same. Like, you look at his shot totals, he's shooting the same number of shots in the first quarter and the third quarter. That's when the starting unit is together most of that time. Shooting the same number of shots, making about the same number of two-pointers. He's dishing out about the same number of assists. It's just that he's, you know, got fewer points and fewer and a lower field goal percentage because 6 of 11 is better than 0 of 9 in from the first quarter threes to the third quarter threes. But all of this is stuff that, like, the Bucks want him to do. They want him to build that confidence early. He scored their first points, like, 4 out of 7 games. Like, this isn't a coincidence. Mike Budenholzer draws up, like, their first play. So it was no, you know, like, happenstance that Eric Bledsoe on Monday night got the ball on a curl coming around Giannis toward the top of the key and then had a decision to make. And since the defense was off of him, he knocked down a 22-footer. Like, if the defense was up, maybe he drives right by and he scores, or maybe he kicks out. But it's not a surprise that the ball is in his hands and he's the one who's setting the tone, or at least they're trying to get him to set the tone and have that confidence and open things up for everybody else. So, I mean, I think the biggest thing for him is that, you know, they want him to play with confidence, with pace, with aggressiveness. Like, you know, I feel like he and Giannis have this, like, thing going where whenever we talk to Giannis, Giannis is like, oh, Bledsoe's always talking to me and telling me to be more aggressive. And I talk to Bledsoe and he's like, oh, Giannis is always talking to me and telling me to be, like, over-aggressive and, like, look for my shot. You know, because they both know that the other one has the ability to, you know, suck in the defense and open things up for other people. But if they're not being aggressive, they can't do that. So it's a little kind of like a, you know, echo chamber for both of them. Like, again, they're just telling each other to be more aggressive. And so if Eric Bledsoe can start making more shots, I mean, right now 23% from three is not going to get it done. But if he can figure out what he's doing right in the first quarter and get that to translate later in the games in terms of his shooting, I mean, that's what helps the Bucks be the best version of themselves as they're currently composed, because, you know, then defenses can't just treat him as the weakest link and ignore him or sink into the paint and you know, make him into a shooter who is not going to make shots. Like, if he can make shots, if he can get around his defender and open up passes for other guys, I mean, there's a lot to work with there. Of course, like I said, it's all predicated on him being able to make those shots.
The Chris Paul thing probably can't be real because of money matters, I realize, and maybe you can sort of explain what would have to happen logistically, financially, for that to even come to pass. In the fantasy land where that could potentially work out, I'm guessing the reasons to say no are, A, you're talking about a player with a lot of injuries, and B, you're talking about a player with, I don't know if questionable team chemistry is really fair to him, but it certainly hasn't been all lollipops and rainbows everywhere Chris Paul has gone. What would you say to the Bucks fan that says Chris Paul's interested in coming to Milwaukee? The Bucks really have to investigate that possibility.
I mean, he was in the story was that he was interested over the summer when Houston was looking for a trade partner, and they eventually found Oklahoma City. But of course, Chris Paul would be interested in coming to Milwaukee. Like, he is getting towards the end of his career. He has not won a championship. I'm sure he was interested in Milwaukee and Philly and either Los Angeles team in Utah, like before they got Mike Conley or whatever. He'd be interested in going wherever he could go that would give him the best chance to win if he was going to leave Houston. Like, I don't think Chris Paul is super duper interested in playing for Oklahoma City. But that's where he is right now. And that's the situation that he finds himself in because he pushed to get that Supermax contract, which he did. And so he's locked into that contract, but he can also get moved on that contract, which he was. And so, I mean, he's making $38.5 million this year alone. Next year, that's 41.3, then 44.2 in the 2021-2022 season. That is a ton of money. If the Bucks are going to make a trade for Chris Paul, they would need to be able to match salaries. They need to send out $38 million in salary to the Oklahoma City Thunder, or at least get, like, reasonably close. I mean, that's kind of the long and short of it. And so, in order to do that, if you don't want to give up Chris Middleton, because I don't think, you know, there's any reason to believe that Bucks fans would want to get rid of Chris Middleton. He's playing really well so far this season, and you know, people might not be happy with his output relative to the amount of money he's making, but I can also tell you that he's playing really well so far this season, shooting the ball really well, looks really comfortable on both ends of the court, and I don't see a situation where, you know, the Bucks would reasonably want to move him. So if you're trying to trade for Chris Paul, you're going to have to give up probably some combination of Eric Bledsoe, George Hill, Brook Lopez, at least pick two, and then probably some young guys, Dante DiVincenzo, DJ Wilson. You might need to give up both those guys. And so at that point, is it worth it to send out, you know, basically a quarter of your roster for one guy who then you're going to have to pay extreme amounts of money for each of the next 3 years, which are not going to be his prime years? And you did mention, like, he has had some chemistry issues that have followed him throughout the years, whether that's his fault or not. Well, he keeps finding chemistry issues wherever he goes, so I feel like there's some fault involved. And would he be complimentary next to Giannis and Chris Middleton? Like, absolutely. Would he fit on this roster? Absolutely. Would it be a good basketball situation? Sure. Would he be better than Eric Bledsoe? I think that's entirely possible, and if not likely, at least for one season. But at the same time, like, this isn't just a, you know, a basketball fit. It's a money fit. And, you know, right now, Eric Bledsoe, people are generally not happy that the Bucks gave him that contract, at least the people that I've seen. But the thing about his contract is that, it is about the middle. If you took all the starting NBA point guard salaries, he's like right there about in the middle of what he's getting paid annually. So it's not like he's getting paid like a top point guard. He's getting paid like an average starting point guard, which, you know, for a first team all defense player, and someone who has the potential that he has, who a season ago, Bucks fans, there was a large contingent that were upset that he wasn't an all-star. I think that, you know, an average salary is actually, you know, decent value. It's not unmovable. If they wanted to try and move him and do something with that, like, it's not impossible. You know, but they also would have to find someone who could do what he does defensively and performs offensively, or at least performs well enough offensively to offset maybe less defense. And that's kind of a tricky situation. I'm not saying it won't happen or it can't happen. But it's something that, no matter what moves the Bucks make this season, they're definitely going to have to be threading the needle to find, you know, replacements for whatever they're giving up. That's just kind of the long and short of it.
A couple more questions here, Matt. One of the statistical analysis takeaways from the first few games of the year is that the Bucks were not getting to the basket with as great efficiency as they'd had in years past. Obviously, they got Giannis. Giannis has been tearing it up, per usual. He has no problem getting the basket the vast majority of the time. But overall, the Bucks weren't, they were able to take, they've been taking the same number of threes. I don't think they've been making quite as many, but it's not that part of the game is deficient. It's that they just haven't been able to get to the hoop. And it's because either teams are scheming that way, or missing Malcolm Brogdon plays a role there, or just overall the Bucks just haven't done that for whatever reason. Is that something that you've seen as well? And I guess, do you feel like over the last couple of games you've seen that addressed to some degree?
It was definitely a problem. In the first few games, there were way too many times they just couldn't get inside, most notably the game against the Boston Celtics. You know, Boston, despite being relatively undersized compared to the Bucks front court in particular, they just sunk into the paint. They helped well. They also had smaller guys who were able to stand their ground, take charges or flop or whatever you want to call it. They had all those things kind of working for them, and the Bucks just couldn't get inside. And so those first few games, that was definitely a problem. And I think that against the Magic, against the Raptors, and against the Timberwolves, I think those things were certainly addressed by, you know, Giannis in particular, you know, getting to the hoop more, getting there more often, finishing more often. And then you also look at Eric Bledsoe and the way he's been able to get to the hoop, especially in the first quarters of games. Go to JS Online, read that story, check it out. And I think that they've definitely been on the upswing in that regard. They're still not anywhere close to where they were. I mean, last year they were the best at getting inside and, you know, shooting a high percentage near the rim. This year they're 11th in the league in points in the paint. That's a number that you know, it's just shy of 50 points per game. So it's still decently high, but it's not where the Bucks were. I think they were around like 56 or so last year for the whole season. But that's just what comes to the territory. I think teams know exactly where the Bucks want to go. They know they want to get to the hoop. Their whole thing is layups, threes, and free throws, and those are the most desirable spots in the court to be. And when you're facing a team that has Giannis, like, you're going to give him the threes. You're going to try and cut everybody off from the threes, and you're going to try and lock down the paint as much as possible. So they just need to figure out how to, play good enough defense to get stops, and if they can push the ball, play with pace, then they will create more opportunities to go against defenses that aren't set, and in doing so, have a better chance of getting inside. And then also, if they can, have a little bit more success from 3-point range. I mean, right now they're shooting a ton of threes. They're shooting like 44 threes a game, but they're only shooting 35%. I mean, that's 12th in the league. It's like slightly above average. If they can get more consistent knocking down threes, then teams will have a harder time selling out against the paint, because three is greater than two. And if you're letting the Bucks get open three after open three, you're probably going to be in trouble there. So it's definitely been better the past few games. But like I said, I don't think the Bucks are where they want to be yet in terms of consistently establishing their inside presence.
Before we get out of here, got to get a Dante DiVincenzo update. We saw him sort of become a regular part of the rotation here against the Timberwolves on Monday. They went to an 11-man unit, and Dante's looking pretty good. We saw some big stuff from him in the preseason. He didn't really get on the floor much early in the year, but here he is, man. And what is your scouting report? I feel like Bucks fans should be pretty excited about how he is, how he's bounced back after all the injuries last year.
Yeah, he's been really good the past few games. He had a career high 17 points on Monday night. He's been getting regular minutes since that Orlando game. When Kyle Korver sat out, the Bucks are generally going to rest him in back-to-back situations. Maybe not all of them, but like that's probably going to be the way they approach things. But he got in a bunch that game. He got in a bunch against the Raptors, and then even with Korver back, DiVincenzo was part of the rotation on Monday night, where he was playing first quarter minutes as Bud went 11 deep with his bench early. But Dante, he's averaging 9.8 points, 3.5 rebounds, 1.3 assists, one steal. He's shooting 47% from the field, and he's at 56% from three, which still fun with small sample sizes. But 9 of 16. Is a really hot start. The most important thing is he's shooting with confidence. He has that kind of quick trigger where when he's in a spot where he knows he wants to be, he's catching, he's shooting, and he's doing it with confidence. He's doing it from all over the court. I think it's important too that he has the handles and the ability to get inside the paint to create off the dribble. He's had a few really nice passes. Remember in that Orlando game, he kind of got caught by the baseline and threw one backwards over his head that got to Robin Lopez for a three. Next possession, he's on the break and he goes behind his back to Pat Connaughton. Those ones stand out. He's also been really active as a rebounder. 3.5 rebounds per game doesn't maybe sound like much, but when you look at his per 36 numbers, I mean, that's up to 8.3. So, he's not playing a ton in the minutes he has, but per 36, I mean, he's putting up, numbers that are at a really good clip. I think that he's someone who could maybe by the end of the season move up and fill in more of that Malcolm Brogdon role, maybe even in the starting lineup. Ooh. Maybe by the end of the season, if he continues doing what he's doing, he offers a little bit more of a dynamism than Wes Matthews does. Like, Wes isn't as much of a creator on offense, or at least he hasn't shown that. He's also not shooting the ball all that well right now from 3-point range, just at 32.4%. Obviously, he's had a few more opportunities to shoot than Dante has, so he has a little bit more of a sample to draw from. But even still, Dante is, he'd have to go 2 of 18 to match where Wes is right now in terms of volume or in terms of percentage. So I think Dante gives them a different kind of edge you know, just the ability to create off the dribble. And maybe he'll come back to earth a little bit. Obviously, he's only played in four games, though I think he has played really well on both ends of the court. There's going to be stretches where he doesn't shoot the ball as well. It happens to every player. There's going to be stretches where, you know, defense maybe can become an issue, or certain teams might do things a certain way where you're not we're going to lose some guys and you're going to struggle a little bit. But overall, you know, I think he has that ability to potentially move up in the rotation. And even if he's not starting, maybe just play starter level minutes, because he does fit off the bench, you know, with the likes of George Hill and Pat Connaughton and Ersan Ilyasova. I mean, the Bucks just have so many guys on their bench, especially wings who can contribute. You know, it's hard to, for at least for Bud, to decide who to put out each night. But I think Dante, with the way he's been performing, he's definitely put himself into the conversation for someone who deserves to be playing on a regular basis and maybe more minutes than he has had so far.
Hey, real quick, before we go, I wanted you to explain something. The statistic TPA, you tweeted this this map from NBA Math that kind of plots every player in the NBA. It shows, TPA meaning total points added, it shows Giannis Antetokounmpo far and away the best when it comes to the both defense and offensive contributions. He's kind of the one of the outliers on this map. You could check that out, by the way, if you follow Matt on Twitter at Matt_Velasquez. But real quickly for people, the layman like me, what TPA, if you could sort of break it down real quickly, what TPA means and how you use it to judge individual players.
Yeah, I mean, this is still slightly above my pay grade. The nice thing is that it was very easy. I just said, hey, look, it's easy to find Giannis.
Cause
it, you
he's know, good.
You read the graph, and it's like total points added on offense, like really far over. You know, total points added on defense, really far up. It's like, okay, like this is very simple. Like he is tracking like way, like, you know, head and shoulders, like literally on the picture, like head and shoulders above like
yes,
other people.
Headshots,
a lot of the league. So, but it's just, you know, looking at like offensive and defensive effectiveness on a per possession basis, you know, while like, you know, accounting for playing time and stuff like that. So there's more to the formula, but that's basically, you know, it's tied into box plus minus and all that kind of stuff. So there's a lot of numbers and a lot of ways to calculate, a lot of things to go into that calculation. But the basic idea is that a player who, you know, has a higher total points added, they're doing more in terms of, you know, points and assists and you know, scoring and all that all type of stuff. And then on defense, they're contributing to times when their team is playing especially well, add in like individual stats, stuff like that. So if you want to check this out, NBAMath.com, you know, they have a whole bunch of stuff. There's definitely no shortage of good information on and good NBA analysis on the internet, and this site is definitely one of them. So yeah, definitely check that out if you are so inclined. But the take home message there, like I said, was Giannis is really, really, really good.
Yes, the analysis we've all been waiting for, the hard hitting analysis. Seems like it's a little bit like value above replacement player, sort of one of the baseball parlance. That's kind of how we refer to that. The rims are always level when Matt Velasquez is around. Milwaukee Journal Sentinel beat reporter. He is going to be in LA as the Bucks take on the Clippers on Wednesday night in Utah, when the Bucks face the Jazz on Friday, followed by a weekend battle in Oklahoma City. Matt, thanks for joining us. We will chat with you again very soon.
All right, can't wait.
Find us on Stitcher, Spotify, Apple Podcasts. Leave us a rating and review, please, people. We love those. They help us out, get more people, you know, to see our podcast. You can also find him or me on Twitter. I mentioned Matt's Twitter handle at Matt_Velasquez, or me at J.R. Radcliffe. That's RADCLIFFE on the end. Thanks for tuning in. We will catch up with you again next week.